today I'm going to read The Mountain Cascades, chapter 12. They rested in the harbor of Phineas, the desert island, and sailing from there, they came to the land of Mari and Dini, a people who were constantly at war with Berbicians, where the hero Polydeuces was welcomed as a god. 12 days afterward, they passed a month on the river Callicrus, and they came to the mouth of that river that flows through the land of the Amazons, the river Thermodon. 14 days from that place brought them to the island that is filled with the birds of Ares, the god of war. These birds dropped upon the heroes heavy pointed feathers that would have pierced them as arrows if they had not covered themselves with their shields. And then, by shouting and by striking their shields with their spears, they raised such a clamor that drove the birds away. They sailed on, borne by a gentle breeze, until a gulf of the sea opened before them, and lo, the mountain that they knew bore some mighty name. Orpheus, looking at its peak and its crags, said, "Lo now, the Argonauts are looking upon the mountain that is named Cascades. When he declared the name, the heroes all stood up and looked on the mountain with awe. In awe they cried out the name that was Prometheus. For upon that mountain the Titan god was held, his limbs bound upon the hard rocks by fetters of bronze. Even as the Argonauts looked toward the mountain, a great shadow fell upon their ship, and looking up, they saw a monstrous bird flying. The beats of the wind, the bird's wings, filled out the sail and drove the Argo swiftly onward. It is a bird sent by Zeus, Orpheus said. It is the vulture that every day devours a liver of the Titan god. They cowered down the ship as they heard that word. All the Argonauts save Heracles. He stood upright and looked out toward where the bird was flying. Then, as the bird came near the mountain, the Argonauts heard a great cry of anguish go up from the rocks. It is Prometheus crying out as the bird of Zeus flies down upon him. They said to one another. Again, they cowered down on the ship, all save Heracles, who stayed looking toward where the great vulture had flown. The night came, and the Argonauts sailed on in silence, thinking in awe of the Titan god and of the doom that Zeus had inflicted upon him. Then, as they sailed on under the stars, Orpheus told them of Prometheus, of his gift to men, and of the fearful punishment that had been meted out to him by Zeus. The gods more than once made a race of men. The first was a golden race. Very close to the gods who dwell on Olympus was this golden race. They lived justly, although there were no laws to compel them. In the time of the season was everlasting spring. The men and women of the golden race lived through the span of life that was far beyond that of men and women of our day. And when they died, it was as though sleep had become everlasting with them. They had all good things, and that without labor, for the earth, without any forcing, bestowed fruits and crops upon them. They had peace all through their lives, this golden race. And after they had passed away, their spirits remained above the earth inspiring the men of the race that came after them to do great and gracious things and to ask justly and kindly to one another. After the golden race had passed away, the gods made for the earth a second race, the silver race, less noble in spirit and in body as the silver race, and the season that visited them was less gracious. In the time of the silver race, the gods made the seasons, summer and spring and autumn and winter. They knew parching heat and the bitter winds of winter and snow and rain and hail. It was the men of silver race who first built houses for shelter. They lived through the span of life that was longer than our span, but it was not long enough to give wisdom to them. Children are brought up at their mother's sides for 100 years, playing at childish things. And when they came to years beyond 100, they quarreled with one another and wronged one another and did not know enough to give reverence to the immortal gods. Then, by the will of Zeus, the silver race passed away as the golden race had passed away. Their spirits stay in the underworld, and they are called by men and blessed spirits of the underworld. And then there was made a third race, the race of bronze. They were a race of great stature, terrible and strong. Their armor was of bronze, their swords were of bronze, their implements were of bronze, and of bronze, too, they made their houses. No great span of life was theirs, for with the weapons that they took and their terrible hands, they slew one another. Thus they passed away and went down under the earth to Hades, leaving no name that men might know them by. The gods created a fourth race, our own, the race of iron. We have not the justice that was amongst the men of the golden race, nor the simpleness that was among the men of silver race, nor the stature, nor the great strength that the men of bronze race possessed. We are of iron that we may endure. It is our doom that we must never cease from the labor that we must quickly grow old. But miserable as we are today, there was a time when the lot of men was more miserable. With poor implements, they had to labor on a hard ground. There was less justice and kindliness amongst men in those days than there is now. Once it came into the mind of Zeus that he would destroy the fourth race and leave the earth to the nymphs and satyrs. He would destroy it by a great flood. But Prometheus, the Titan god who had given aid to Zeus against other Titans, Prometheus, who was called the Foreseer, could not consent to the race of men being destroyed utterly, and he considered a way of saving some of them. To a man and a woman, Deucalion and Pyrrha, just and gentle people, he brought the word of the plan of Zeus, and he showed them how to make the ship that would bear them through that was about to be sent upon the earth. Then Zeus shut up in their cave. Then Zeus shut up in their cave all the winds but the wind that brings rain and clouds. He bade this wind, the south wind, sweep over the earth, flooding it with rain. He called up Poseidon and bade him to let the sea pour in upon the land. And Poseidon commanded the rivers to put forth all their strength and sweep dikes away and overflow their banks. The cloud and the sea and the rivers poured upon the earth. The flood rose higher and higher, and in the places where the pretty lambs had played, the ugly sea calves now gamboiled. Men in their boats drew fishes out of the tops of elm trees, And the water nymphs were amazed to come on men's cities under the waves. Soon even the men and women who had boats were overwhelmed by the rise of water. All perished when, except Deucalion and Pyrrha, his wife. Them the waves had not overwhelmed, for they were in the ship that Prometheus had shown them how to build. The flood went down at last, and Deucalion and Pyrrha climbed up to a high and dry ground. Zeus saw that the two of the race of men had been left alive. But he saw that these two were just and kindly, and had a right of reverence for the gods. He spared them, and he saw their children again, peopling the earth. Prometheus, who had saved them, looked on the men and women of the earth with compassion. Their labor was hard, and they wrought much to gain little. They were chilled at night in their houses, and the wind that blew in the daytime made the old men and women bend double like a wheel. Prometheus thought to himself that if the men and women had the elements that only the gods knew, the elements of fire, they would make themselves implements for labor. They could build houses that would keep out chilling winds, and they could warm themselves at the blaze. But the gods had not willed that men should have fire, and to against the will of the gods would be impious. Prometheus went against the will of the gods. He stole fire from the altar of Zeus, and he hid it on a hollow fennel stalk, and he brought it to men. Then men were able to hammer iron into tools, and cut down forests with axe, and sow grain where the forest had been. Then they were able to make houses that the storms would not overthrow, and they were able to warm themselves at hearth fires. They had rest from their labor at times. They built cities. They became beings who no longer had the heads and backs bent, but were able to raise their faces even to the gods. And Zeus spared the race of men who had now the sacred element of fire. But he knew that Prometheus had stolen his fire, and from his own altar he had given it to men, and he thought on how he might punish the great Titan god for his impiety. He brought back from the underworld the giants that had put there to guard the Titans, and that had been hurled down to Tartarus. He brought back Gyes, Cottus, and Boreas, and he commanded them to lay hands upon Prometheus and fasten him with fetters to the highest, blackest crag upon Cassus. And Boreas, Cottus, and Gyes seized upon the Titan god and carried him to Cassus and fettered him with fetters of bronze to the highest, blackest crag, with fetters of bronze that may not be broken. There they have left the Titans stretched under the sky, with cold winds blowing upon him, and with the sun streaming down on him, and that his punishment might be exceed all other punishments, Zeus had sent a vulture to prey upon him, a vulture that tears at his liver each day. And yet Prometheus does not cry out that he has repented of his gift of man, although the winds blow upon him, and the sun streams upon him, and the vulture tears at his liver. Prometheus will not cry out his repentance to heaven. And Zeus may not utterly destroy him, for Prometheus, the foreseer, knows the secret that Zeus would fain and have him disclose. He knows that even Zeus overthrew his father and made himself the ruler in his stead, so too another will overthrow Zeus, and one day Zeus will have to have the fetters broken from around the limbs of Prometheus. Prometheus, and will have to bring from the rock and the vulture and into the council of the Olympians and the unyielding Titan god. When the light of the morning came, the Argo was very near the mountain Caucasus. The voyagers looked in awe upon its black crags. They saw the great vulture circling over the high rock, and from beneath where the vulture circled, they heard a weary cry. Then Heracles, who all night had stood by the mast, cried out to the Argonauts to bring the ship near to the landing place. But Jason would not have them go near. The fear of the wrath of Zeus was strong upon them. Rather, he bade the Argonauts put all their strength into their rowing and draw far off from the forbidden mountain. Heracles, not heeding to what Jason ordered, declared that it was a purpose to make his way up to the black crag, and with his shield and his sword in his hands, slay the vulture that preyed upon the life of Prometheus. Then Orpheus, in a clear voice, spoke to the Argonauts. "Surely some spirit possesses Heracles," he said. "Despite all we do or say, that he will make his way to where Prometheus is fettered in the rock. Do not gainsay him in this. Remember that Neros, the Ancient One of the Sea, declared. Did Neros not say that great labor awaited Heracles, and that in the doing of it he should work out the will of Zeus? Say him not. How just is it be if he who is the son of Zeus, freed from his torments and much enduring Titan god?" So Orpheus said in his clear, commanding voice. They drew near the mountain Caucasus. Then Heracles, gripping the sword and shield that were the gifts from the gods, sprang out on the landing place. The Argonauts shouted farewell to him, but he, filled as he was with an overmastering spirit, did not heed their words. A strong breeze drove them onward. Darkness came down, and the Argo went on through the night. With the morning light, those who were sleeping were awakened by the cry of Nauplius. Lo, the Phases and the utmost born of the sea. They sprang up and looked with many strange feelings upon the broad river they had come to. Here was Phases emptying itself into the sea of Pontus. Up that river was Colossus and the city of the King Aetes, the end of their voyage, the place where was kept the Golden Fleece. Quickly they let down the sail, they lowered the mast, and they laid it along the deck. Strongly they grasped the oars. They swung the Argo around, and they entered the broad stream of the Phases. Up the river they went with the mountain Caucasus in their left hand, and on their right to the groves and gardens of Ea, King Aetes' city. As they went up to the stream, Jason poured from the golden cup an offering to the gods. And to the dead heroes of that country, the Argonauts prayed for a good fortune of their enterprise. It was Jason's counsel that they should not at once appear before King Aetes, but visit him after they had seen the strength of his city. They drew their ship into a shaded backwater, and there they stayed while day grew and faded around them. Night came, and heroes slept upon the deck of the Argo. Many things came back to them in the dreams or through their half-sleep. They brought thought of the Laminian maidens that they had parted from, of the clashing rocks they had passed between, and the look in the eyes of Heracles as he raised his face to the high black peak of Caucasus. They slept, and they thought they saw before them the golden fleece. Darkness surrounded it. It seemed to the dreaming Argonauts that the darkness was the magic power that King Aedes possessed. So that was chapter 12. Bye, guys. See you later. See you later. See you later. See ya. See ya later. Bye, guys.